Well, hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today, I am joined by me. I'm solo podcasting. Before we dive in, I'm reminding you to click that subscribe button to like, to share, to comment, to send all your friends over to the Word Up podcast so you can guys can have exciting, thought-provoking topics to chew on. I'm also reminding you to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com, and I'll leave the housekeeping there. I decided to switch up the order of this podcast, so I'm interrupting our regularly broadcast video to let you know that what actually preceded the section we're about to get into felt more appropriate for part two content, and so I've just spliced that out, tacked it on to the end of the podcast. We get into it a little bit in the public section, and then it concludes over on my Patreon and Locals pages. Just wanted to give you a heads up as to how it was going back to our regularly scheduled out of order broadcasting. I thought to break it up, we'd play with some song lyrics. This is something that I teach about in my pop propaganda digital course for teens and grownups alike. And when I was teaching it live, I would have my students bring in the lyrics to whatever, you know, a song they were listening to. And we would just analyze the lyrics from the point of view of the propaganda techniques we were learning, quantum languaging, and start to understand how song lyrics are one of the social engineer's most effective programming devices, because these catchy tunes have all this repetition, right? The number one propaganda tool is repetition, right? So these songs with these catchy grooves and these low vibe, degrading, demoralizing lyrics that we sing to ourselves, right? So we aspirate through our own beings, programming every cell in our body and our subconscious minds with these messages over and over and over again. I don't know about you, but when I like a song, that song is on repeat for a while, for a couple days, until I overdo it, like mangoes in India, and never want to eat another mango again, except it's not that I don't want to listen to the songs again. It's just they're so good, right? So these lyrics will go in over. And it's why Tavistock Institute for Public Relations has such a strong hand in pop music and in the lyrics that are going into our minds. And I was remembering back in the day, was it like 80s, 90s, when Tipper Gore was on her big like censorship thing and they were labeling albums and CDs like parental advisory, and there was like all this hullabaloo around it. And then the songs and how tame those songs were in comparison to what everyone's listening to today, like unfettered, unchecked, and God knows what other frequencies, avenues like Spotify, Pandora, even just like Beats headphones, right? Like what frequencies are being mixed in with whatever frequencies are already mixed into the songs on top of the lyrics and those frequencies that are coming in. So these song lyrics operate like mantras, right? Mantras are usually like sacred or holy words or phrases that are repeated over and over and over again to program the mind into states of bliss, love, coherence, peace, harmony, right? Beautiful higher frequencies by way of these repeated words. Songs are exactly the same. And most of the songs that the masses are listening to are programmed with low vibe frequencies that are programming us into the lower emotions, into the lower energetic states, in service to demoralization. I mean, mostly demoralization, but there's also the gross consumption. And this was ultimately what my last batch of students came to, where it was like, oh, okay, everything is just wanting to convince us that like, we're nothing without love. We're nothing without bling and money, and women should sexualize themselves. And like, they just got it. So like, there's not a lot of variety in the demoralization and lack and limitation programming informing most songs. They just really like to double down. So the songs that I brought today, I didn't bring any with the like bling bragging lyrics. But think of like any Lil' Kim song, Missy Elliott song. I mean, Missy Elliott sings on a song called ATM. And the whole song is about like, guys need to have money to date her, and she just wants their ATM card, and look at my Birkin bag, and look at all the stuff that I buy, and that being like very, very consistent through hip hop rap paradigm. Okay, but these are the lyrics. So I was at the gym today, and when I'm doing weights, there are a couple of different playlists that I toggle between. So all the lyrics that I'm sharing with you today were lyrics that I listened to today. Now, granted, I'm curating my playlist. I'm the one who's choosing these songs. I do take full responsibility. And some of them are just so low vibe that they're funny to me. It's like the absurdity of the fact that these are song lyrics and that I like these songs, like it just moves to this place of like utter ridiculous where I'm not even upset about it. It's just like, wow, the Sham Show is so hilarious. So this is one of those hilarious songs. This is probably right now like my top hilarious song. So this is from 2016. All right, so it's not that new. I don't think much of my musical taste is, except for like the Smile. I'm all about the Smile right now. Okay, so this song is called Come Down by Anderson .Paak. I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong. And I'm just gonna give you some of the lyrics. So, you know, I just wanna give us the chorus. Just to keep this succinct, I'm just gonna stay with the chorus on this one. The chorus goes, hey, now you drank up all my liquor, come on. What I'm supposed to do now? And you talking all that shit, now come on. You gonna half back it up. If I get too high now, sugar, come on, I might never come down. You might not ever come down. Now, let me get down. You might not ever come down. Nah, 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 let me get down. You might not ever come down. Let me get down. This is one of my favorite songs. Okay, so they mentioned the Gucci. Oh, this is good. Okay, so this song really has it all. Okay, so scrolling down, we have these lyrics, can't beat it, can't beat it, can't beat it. Can't beat it with a big bat though. Can't see her with these pitch black Gucci frames on. Gotta get those luxury items laid into all the lyrics these days. It's nutso. Did Gucci pay for that? Who knows? Okay, so can't see her with these pitch black Gucci frames on. Let me take these bitches off. Let me get the full scope. Hold up. Huh, full screen, HD, let me take another picture. Let me pull it to the pre-show. Whoa, cool beans, cool beans. That's a whole lot of reefer. Let me help you with the pre-roll. And then we go right into that awesome chorus, because you know how we like to repeat the choruses. You drank up all my liquor, come on, what am I supposed to do now? I freaking love the song. It's so fun to dance to, and the lyrics are so Disgusting? Like, what the fuck? All right. So, those are some of the lyrics that I was programming into myself on the leg press machine. And then, now this is one of my older favorites. This is from 2002. But I'm just gonna give you one piece because, so it's an Eminem song. And this is before, I'm not liking what Eminem's doing these days, but 2002 Eminem. I freaking loved him. And that documentary with Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine, and they have this incredible footage of Eminem just freestyling and like coming up with my name is, when he was like, my name is Shady. In real time, it's so good, right? So I got a soft spot in my heart for OG Eminem, and this is truly my favorite part of the song. But you know what? Let me give you a little bit of it's such a cornucopia of like lyrical, low vibe, lyrical demoralization, wonderfulness that I want to share some with you. So it opens, like it's got this kind of exciting open. And then when he really jumps into the lyrics, he says, well, if you want shady, this is what I'll give you. A little bit of weed mixed with some hard liquor. Some vodka that'll jumpstart my heart quicker. All right, so we got the liquor, right? And just noticing the through line, this is what I always teach my students. Like, you'll notice in the songs what appears over and over and over. Booties, bling, weed, liquor, comparison, posturing. All right. So, I mean, this song is so nasty, but I love it. But here are my favorite lyrics. they tried to shut me down on MTV, but it feels so empty without me. So, come on and dip, bum on your lips. Fuck that. Come on your lips and some on your tits and get ready, 'cause this shit's about to get heavy. I just settled all my lawsuits. Fuck you, Demi. So when this song comes on and I'm like wanting to sing out loud at the gym, I'm not going to sing come on your lips and some on your tits while I'm on the leg press machine. I just don't think it would go over that well, and I'm not one for manners. A couple things on this. So, all right, we have the blatant like raw, super sexualized, like kind of grossness, low vibe stuff. It's clearly a reaction because in the song he mentions being shut down by the FCC, right? So I get it. It's that reactive force, counterforce, got it. But the thing that really bums me out about this song is when he says, I just settled on my lawsuits. Fuck you, Demi. I don't know the history between he and I don't even know which Demi it is. Lovato, Moore, I don't know. But I'm bummed that he sullied his song with this like with this quantum entanglement, right? Because so he's still mad. He's still got his panties in a bunch about whatever the lawsuit was with Demi. He hasn't forgiven her. He hasn't cut cords. He hasn't let it go. He's still holding on to the idea that he was victimized to her, thus keeping him in a quantum entanglement with this Demi. And while I'm sure it felt good in the moment from an emotional space to like spit out that line, fuck you, Demi. The quantum entanglement isn't just in that moment where he was choosing to tether himself to this sucky relationship dynamic, but this song has been codified. This song is now a part of pop music history. And every time this awesome song is played, he has to hear mention of this yucky lawsuit with Demi. So, what I would imagine is not a positive memory for Eminem, what wasn't like a peak experience of his life, and probably is something again, maybe I'm projecting here, that he would prefer to forgive and forget, now he's forever tethered to, and he's forever going to be reminded of every time this song plays. So I'm just sad for him that he did this to himself, and that wound has to be like poked at. I mean, I don't know how often Eminem is listening to his own songs, but this one's so good. I mean, I would hope that he wouldn't rule it out, but that piece, I'm guessing it's going to make it all the harder. All right, so moving on from that one. Now, again, we're going classics. I was obviously listening to my classic gangsta playlist. So from 99, from the past tense verb. Okay, I'm just gonna start from the beginning. You'll know what song this is. You know, thug 'em, fuck 'em, love 'em, leave 'em, cause I don't fucking need 'em. Take 'em out the hood, keep 'em looking good, but I don't fucking feed 'em. First time they fuss, I'm breezin'. Talking about what's the reasons? I'm a pimp in every sense of the word, bitch. So this is current Boule Illuminati King, Jay-Z, on Big Pimpin'. Think how many young men in 1999 were influenced by this song, by the idea that their hero, right, this like brilliant, super talented, good-looking baller of a rap superstar is saying, I don't fucking need women. I don't treat them well. I don't even buy them food. I just fuck them, use them, and throw them away, because that's how badass successful dudes roll. That was the message being shared. I mean, more than shared, but like indoctrinated into however many generations of young men. I mean, and women, God knows what it was like for young women to hear this, right? Does that just translate into like, okay, I have no value because this is how big shots are gonna treat me? Regardless, we can see that these lyrics, these mantras being repeated over, over and over again. I mean, I cannot tell you how many times I've sung these lyrics. Now, it's not landing. I don't think it is. Maybe. I mean, how would I not be affected? I have a subconscious mind. I have cells. These aren't uplifting, sparkly, 5D heart-centered lyrics. It's a sacrifice I make to get my groove on. Anyway, I'm not saying don't listen to music. This is something that I was talking about with Joel Neurosimos on the last Here for the Truth podcast that we recorded. It was episode 201. That's my mnemonic remembering. And I did just send out a newsletter about it, but we had this conversation because all of us love songs with like really crummy, demoralizing lyrics. And it's this kind of like quandary conundrum, like, what do we do? And as I said on the podcast, it's like, I think it's more being mindful. Look, we're not going to escape the indoctrination soup in which we're all swimming. Of course, I recommend safeguarding ourselves as much as possible. For me, my weakness, or the weakness that I'm currently speaking of, the historical weakness, has been my love of music and music with not necessarily high vibe lyrics. For other people, it might be video games, it might be movies. And for some people, they might be total aesthetics and like, you know, living in nature and homesteading and not dealing with any of this. Like, there's no one right way, wrong way. I think it's just being aware, and also being aware of like, where are the vulnerabilities, right? If I'm vulnerable, if I'm dealing with scarcity consciousness, right? And I haven't yet rewritten that belief system, that's still a program that's running through me, then, and I'm listening to a lot of the bling bragging type music that has me feeling less than if I don't have the Birkin, if I don't have the Gucci shades, you know, if I don't have the whatever these people are selling, then it might be wise for me to look at the music I'm listening to and to really examine whether the repetition of taking those lyrics in is supporting me and transmuting an energetic that isn't working for me, right? So I think it's like just being real with where we're at and what we're dealing with it with, and being real with, is this music helping me? Like, think of, you know, Thom Yorke's or Radiohead song, All I Need, right? I love Radiohead to Sirius being back, but I'm under no illusions that that song is like a codependent, anxious attachment pathology with a really cool melody, right? To allege that you're all I need is to really do myself a disservice by putting all my eggs in the basket called my partner. It's putting a lot of pressure on the relationship. It doesn't feel super autonomous or self-authorized or healthy or functional in any way. But how many of our songs are like these love songs of like, I'm nothing, you know, I can't live if living is without you. Like, I mean, there are so many. But again, if we're operating with like healthy attachment styles and healthy relationship to ourselves and our partners and our solitude, then it's not going to be a problem. But if I am walking around thinking that I'm a big fat loser because I'm single and I'm not in partnership, then it would be wise for me to pay attention to the songs that I'm listening to. And if there are lyrics that I'm taking in and running through my subconscious mind as mantras that are telling me that I'm nothing if I'm not in love, right? And then I would recommend, yeah, stop listening to that stuff. Cut it out. Knock it off. You know, I love Beautiful Chorus. I love their music. There is uplifting, you know, Trevor Hall. It might not be your vibe, but I mean, there are plenty of artists who are putting out cool music. You know, Joel Rafiti, like Deepak, right? Like that's high vibing. And it, again, like there's no dogma here. There's no hard and fast rules. I obviously still like listening to OG Jay-Z when I'm working out, but I'm not identifying with the lyrics. I'm not attaching to the lyrics, and I'm holding them loosely with equanimity, which is clearly the new vibe for fall. All right, let's pause for a sip and then move on. Oh, wait, there was one more song I wanted to go over only because, and I don't listen to this because I think this song is terrible. And in doing that, I would be making an objective assessment of someone else's artistry that, is going to be infected with all the frequencies that come along with judgment. So I'm going to switch it up and say, I don't like this song, so I don't listen to this song. But I felt like it was worthy of examination. Run the World by Beyonce. So I'm gonna read you the lyrics. Keep in mind, repetition is the A number one tool of the propagandist. Here we go. Girls, we run this mother. Girls, we run this mother. Girls, we run this mother. Oh, I forgot the yas. Girls, we run this mother. Girls. Then we move into the chorus. Oh, that's the intro. Here's the chorus. Who runs the world? Girls. Girls. Who runs the world? Girls. Girls, who runs the world? Girls, girls, who runs the world? Girls, girls, who run this mother? Girls, who run this mother? Ah, yeah, girls, who run this mother? Ah, girls, who run this mother? Ah, yeah, girls, who run the world? Girls, 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 girls! That's the chorus. Alrighty then. So, moving on from these brilliant repetitive lyrics, it reminds me of this shirt that I've spoken about before, The Future is Female, where it's like, no, the future is integrated because men and women work together. That's how we thrive. As Beyonce would clearly know from her partnership with Jay-Z, right? Like, you're living it, right? You're living integrated partnership. I mean, who knows, right? Who knows what that theater is about? But to say that girls run the world, and she's not saying women run the world, she's saying girls. So girls, like little girls, prepubescent, Hello Kitty, pink, glitter, girls. I mean, wow, just wow. So she says, I'm repping for the girls who taken over the world. Help me raise a glass, drinking, always drinking, for the college grads. Oh, way to send people into the academic indoctrination system. Brilliant. This goes out to all the women getting it in. You on your grind, grind, hustle culture, boss babe, work, 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 work. We smart enough to make millions, strong enough to bear the children, then get back to business. Now, I'm not of that whole like Christian right thing, that like trad wife that like poo-poos women who want to work, or single moms, like however you want to do it, it's all fine. But I can say, as a woman, like, just working and like trying to be creative is pretty exhausting. Like, running a lot of masculine energy through a feminine body is exhausting. So we know that this is that like second wave feminist narrative, you know, women can do it all, be it all, have babies, go to work. It's like, okay, but like, while stressing out your body and like not being able to hold that like really soft, relaxed, like all encompassing feminine allowing, because we're all like hustling and grinding and like, so thank you for that, Beyonce. But there was something else. My persuasion can build a nation. All right, I guess. So then we go back to the chorus. I mean, it's just, we run this mother, girls, 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 not women, girls, 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 not together, like no honoring of the men, just like, no, women are superior, like hierarchy a go-go. Women are not even women. It's not even women. It's girls are up here. And does that mean like grown men who identify as girls and like jerk off in public bathrooms and dressing rooms and like, is that what we're talking about? So girls are up here, and then I guess men and boys are all down here because girls, 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 girls run this mother. All right. Oh, here it was. This is it. Some of them men, they, sorry, I'm messing up Beyonce's grammar. Some of them men think they freak this like we do, but no, they don't. Make your check, come at the neck, disrespect us. No, they won't. Boy, don't even try to touch this. Boy, this beat is crazy. It's like so antagonistic, right? Like, don't come at me. Don't disrespect me. Like, why are you bringing that into the field? Why is this negativity? Like, why is there conflict? Why is this a girls against boys and men? Like, ugh. Anyway, all right. So those are the pieces I wanted to give us on the lyrics. And I'm thinking to start bringing the lyrics in on the regular in the podcast to just help us attune to all the ways that words are programming us all day, every day. All right. The last piece I want to get into is the language of eternity. This is going to be a longer exploration I've been wanting to lead the Language of Eternity webinar for a while, and it was just last week where I thought I might have the bandwidth to do this. And then I realized, oh, it's not just teaching a webinar, it's creating it all on the back end and creating the links and changing the website and then promoting it and then filling it. And then I was like, yeah, I'm not doing that. I definitely don't have the bandwidth. It's not even the bandwidth. I'm not feeling inclined to do that right now. And if it were a situation where I could just show up, teach it, and go, I'm good to go. I'm putting that out into the multiverse. I'm absolutely available for those kinds of teaching situations in the here and now. So the language of eternity, it came up a lot this week with my coaching clients. And so I wanted to address it head on. Now, the language of eternity is the languaging paradigm that acknowledges that linear time is a fiction, and that the act of speaking linear time sustains the illusion of mortality and death and time-borne degradation in this realm. The truth of time, as physicists will tell us, is that time is omnidirectional, multidimensional, and simultaneous, all in the here and now. I've also heard it described as time is a fourth dimensional measure of synchronicity. So let's take the second one. As of this moment, we are third dimensional machines. We are third dimensional beings living in a third dimensional reality construct. Our brains are set up, programmed, architected to operate in third dimensional reality. We can understand second and first dimensional reality because those are the dimensions that precede and go into third dimensional reality, right? As above, so below. Life evolves to transcend and include all of the levels that came before. But as these bodies and these brains were not designed to operate in fourth dimensional reality, it's really a giant mind bender to try to wrap our minds around fourth dimensional constructs, which is what's fun and futile about trying to wrap our minds around time. And yep, we do it. And my friend Michael Wan does it really well. So for anyone who wants to geek out hard on time and calendrillings, check out his stuff. Michael Wan, Susquehanna Alchemy. No, he's not paying me. This is unpaid commercial number two today. It's time to really switch up my business model. All right. So the mind can't really wrap itself around like, oh, it's a fourth dimensional measure of synchronicity, because synchronicities are more anomalies in this realm, the way that we're operating under the fiction of linear time, which has been indoctrinated into us over God knows how many generations, centuries, eons. But the truth of the matter is that past, present, future are all here right now, all here simultaneously. How we move dimension to dimension, I'm still figuring out. I know there are people who know how to do it. But in this reality, we have been given the fictional construct of linear time, which attempts to tell us that the past is over here and we move from the past to the present and from the present into the future. It's like a linear conveyor belt. And that we have no control over this future. It exists of its own accord, like just some magical thing, and we're just moving towards it, victims of it, with no creative say, no agency over it. So none of that is true. But because this is a fiction that we've been given, that fiction is sustained through our language, and our language is riddled with linear time. With words and phrases that are coded with the frequencies of linear time. So, what is linear time? I am this many years old, older than you, younger than you. Oh, that's a, that tree is far older than that blackberry bush, right? Notice how much of temporal descriptions are comparisons, older, younger. So notice as you start to contemplate time from the perspective that I'm sharing, notice how much of our references of time are like comparisons. And I don't mean time in terms of scheduling. I mean time in terms of how many years, I was gonna say, how many years does this person have, which is how they would say it, like say in Spain. It's my preference to say, how many times has this person been around the sun, right? When we're speaking in those terms, is for, you know, how old is this person? And we'll get to the coding in that ridiculous question in a moment. All we're thinking is like, is this person older than I am? Is this person younger than I am? Is this person age appropriate for my son, right? We're always comparing, we're always thinking of, it's like doesn't exist of its own accord. There's some sort of entanglement comparison going on when we age things, right? So for today, I feel like we'll just stick with this tiny piece of it, and then I'll continue to unpack little bits of the language of eternity. And I didn't think I was gonna get actually specifically into the language part today, and this is where we're at. So yay for being flexible. So when we're dealing with, so let's look at the question, how old are you, right? That question in itself is a curse, because in our culture, describing humans as old is not a compliment. It's not something that we laud or respect or are happy for, right? It's something that we've been indoctrinated to fear, to deride, to look down on, to ignore, to put out to pasture, right? That's how it is in this culture. So even the question, how old are you, is a setup for a curse, right? If someone poses the question to me, how old are you? And I respond by inserting however many trips around the sun I've made, I am tacitly signing on to this old curse. This is how old I am, right? That's the programming that's going into my cells and my subconscious mind. Think about it. Think about why people are historically in our culture, not necessarily happy to celebrate birthdays, right? How much of that has to do with the framing, with the actual languaging of how old are you? Those four letters that are so standard in our culture, we'll ask a toddler, how old are you, right? Now the toddler might not yet have been indoctrinated to internalize some sort of negativity in tethering their sun spins to old, but that programming is certainly happening, right? And it's not going to take that long for these youngsters to start to figure out in observing the world around them that old is not something that people aspire to be, that people respect, that people have lots of warm, fuzzy feelings for. So even in the way that question is language, we're already operating with a curse. And that curse is attempting to shackle us to the fiction of linear time. Okay, I'm of two minds of ways to go with this. So let's continue on. So let's say I'm 8 years old. How old are you? How old are you, right? So the question is, I'm identifying you. This is your identity. How much oldness are you going to self-identify with in answering the question, right? So I'm 8 years old. I am. We know that I am are the most powerful words in the English language. They are the equivalent to our master creatorship as gods, as creative beings in this realm. So everything that follows I am is programming us on so many levels and dimensions. It's, you know, it is our, the I am-ness, right? I cannot underscore how much power it has when we define ourselves as I am anything. So I am 8 years old, right? So again, that tether, that shackling to this idea of old, which is subtly and not so subtly degrading our relationship to our sun spins as we accrue more and more of them, because it's been tethered from the get-go in this culture to old, right? And doesn't take much to pay attention to see how elders are treated in this culture, how the ideas of aging are derided in this culture, anti-aging, fight age, defy age, how youth is elevated, right? It is not gonna take us long to realize that's not a good thing, and yet that's how we're self-identifying. I am 8 years old. I am 24 years old, right? That's the program. So the way that this this linear time languaging is functioning is, I always picture it like a rope that's strung between two posts. And every time we use temporal languaging, we use linear time programmed languaging, we are putting another stake in between that rope and pulling it down, right? And what that does is it activates the mortality codes. The mortality codes are directly linked to linear time-based languaging. So when we speak those codes, I am this many years old, we're putting a stake in that rope and we're tethering ourselves to the fiction of linear time, and we're activating the mortality codes and telling them, hey, start configuring my body to the dominant programming that is associated with this many sun spins, with this many years old, right? All right, so the language of eternity is a pretty big paradigm, as it completely contradicts the story of mortality and time-based degradation, right? Like losing of mechanical functioning, losing of certain faculties, right? All of that is tied in with the mortality code. So when we stop speaking the mortality codes, then we're ceasing to activate those mechanisms in our bodies, in our minds. We're availing ourselves to the truth of multidimensional, omnidirectional, present moment, synchronous time now. And in that space, those aging programs are not running. So I'm gonna leave it there. So now we're back to what I had initially started off this podcast with, that I ultimately decided was more appropriate for my part two Patreon locals content. How's it going? It's a little cuckoo out there. I'm recording on a Wednesday the 16th, and the Wayback Machine was quote unquote hacked. But the whole story is bizarre, that it was like hacked and then had a different type of attack happening at the same time, when obviously, you know, the powers that were would prefer that those archives not exist. Like, do we really need to overthink it? I'm guessing. Anyway, but the censorship industrial complex is, I'd say it's out of hand, but it's been out of hand, and it continues to ramp up. And because consensus reality is not addressing it on any level, is so like head in the sand about it, I'm continuing to chronicle it. I'm continuing to put it on the public record. And putting things on the public record is going to be a theme today. So I spoke about this on my most recent live stream with Emily, but I got another YouTube strike. I can't tell if it's an official strike or just like a slap on the wrist. Basically, I got a YouTube spanking and I got a video deleted, and I'm on YouTube probation because I went through YouTube re-education training for how to be an obedient content creator. But the story is more ridiculous than every other story of being censored, deleted, spanked by the thought police. But I'm gonna pause for some hydration. All right. So I'm gonna give you the sequence of events because it seems pretty clear that they're connected. I was blocked by Brett Weinstein on Twitter, and I hadn't even been tweeting, so it was fairly out of the blue. The only thing I could think of is that I was tagged in an Amazing Polly post where she was calling out Brett, so maybe it was by association, but it seemed odd that, like, unprompted, and it was just when he changes background to rescue the Republic, and probably like 2 weeks before that. So I'm blocked by Brett on Twitter, and then I see a colleague on post something on Facebook for Rescue the Republic with the caveat, right? The lead-in was, conspiracy theorists would have you believe that, the people participating in this event have been turned over to the dark side. And there was, I was of many minds around this. Most of me was like, I don't want to get into some stupid freaking internet fight. I have better things to do with my time. Also, I don't want to go poking the bear. Also, this is a lie, and the public record needs to be updated, made clear, factualized. And what was frustrating is this colleague, it's like, I don't want personal conflict, and I've seen this colleague use this propaganda technique multiple times over the past year and a half, 2 years, and it feels personal. Now, I am have historically been prone to running sort of paranoid conspiracy theory energy through my vehicle, right? So I'm not going to completely sign on to the fact that this person's like large scale public, like little propaganda mind tricks are deliberately aimed towards me, and they do seem pretty on the nose, right? And we see this, and Emily and I talk about this as far as what's happening with this particular, like, IDW, SFI, Consilience Project, Health Freedom Movement, Inc. Operation we see going down. It's like this unspoken conversation that we're all having, wherein Emily and I will offer our critiques to their op, and then they, with regularity and consistency, take the notes and pivot accordingly. And so this is in keeping with that pattern, with that formula that we're playing out, that dynamic that, it's so consistent with these people, right? So what I speak on my podcast and in my podcast with Emily is directly addressed through various, like multiples of these players, public posts and podcasts and perspectives, which is our frustration of like, just put us on the payroll. Like, that's fine. We're obviously helping you out, which is a dynamic that we're definitely. There's so much ambivalence around it for all the obvious reasons. And I mean, I'm getting into topic number two. They're all intersecting today. Like, the number one thing in terms of safeguarding freedom during authoritarian takeovers is to continue to speak the truth, to continue to speak it out. So it's like this duty that I feel we have, those of us who have been tasked with helping to safeguard our freedom. I wish more of us would participate and more people would simply get off their knees and say no and just speak what they know is true. And I get that we're still in the process of getting out of our own ways and mustering up the courage to join us. And this was my point, is that I'm blocked by Brett. Then there's this post around the conspiracy theorist pushback to rescue the Republic in being divisive and harming the movement by speaking out people's shillery and pawnery in the public sphere. So, like I said, I was super conflicted. I didn't want to do it, but I also feel like it's a lie. And that particular propaganda technique, like, I'm not gonna buy it. It's so obvious. It's so formulaic at this point. Like, just stop. It's like pot kettle black, obviously. So all I put in the comment section was, Brett Weinstein didn't turn to the dark side. He was put into the public consciousness by the dark side in the first place. And then someone asked for more information. And I said, you know what? Emily and I talk about it on our podcast. We've been talking about it for years. Here's our website. Here's a free promo code to join. I would start at episode 59. 59 and 60, you can catch yourself up to speed. It's like, I'm not feeling inspired to distill 7 years worth of research and like a million bits of dot connecting into a Facebook post for strangers. Like, I have better things to do with my time. It's exhausting. It's reductive. It's only going to invite pushback from those who would seek to misunderstand because of their devotion to their indoctrination and their mind control and their enslavement mechanisms, and because it's Facebook, and like, I don't need to go declaring some controversial perspective during this rise in like attacks on free speech and you know, the various ways that the thought police are amping up their punishments and their spankings for daring to speak the truth in what is allegedly a free country that is allegedly protected by this little thing called the First Amendment. Pause for a sip. So then this guy weighs in who's clearly, I'm not gonna call him a handler. I'm doing my best to steer clear of labels and titles. They're super divisive. And this guy has attempted to handle me in the past on posts within this community. I know the markers. It's happened a million times. So it's like, you know, ask exhausting open-ended questions to distract me and have me defending myself. Send me like 20 paragraph comment responses on Facebook. Like, who has the time? Who has the time to do that? Anyway, and I'm not interested in engaging with this person who has already proven himself to be completely shut down and mind controlled, and not willing to entertain narratives that are commonly demonized as conspiracy theory. Like, I already know this little gnat, right? Very annoying. So he weighs in, and you know what? It's so freaking boring. I'm not even going to go into it. But when I declined his request for me to break it down for him as though I'm his personal on-call journalist, he then went into this explanation as how I'm clearly a low integrity person. I'm clearly a liar, into all of this like character assassination, smearing, whatever. So that happens. I block him. And then it's within 2 days, 3 days, that all of a sudden I get this strike on YouTube that happens to be around, wait for it, Brett Weinstein. So what's the through line here? The Brett Weinstein psyop is clearly messing with me. So I'm gonna share the screenshots so I can walk us through this latest bout. And I wanna be clear, like, this is so boring, and I have no desire to victimize myself to thought policing, to censorship, and it's very important that that does it for the first half of today's solo podcast. As you are inspired to pick up the second half, you can find that over on both my Locals and Patreon communities. Those addresses are dannykatz.locals.com and patreon.com/dannykatz. At both communities, for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of my second half conversations, plus oodles of bonus content, plus the knowledge that you are supporting me in continuing to create podcasts and videos and content that helps us all empower, grow, expand our critical thinking, and hopefully giggle at the ridiculousness of it all. I'm reminding you to sign up for my newsletter at dannycats.com, and thank you so much for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are omniscopic amazingness. I will see you over on the Patreon and the locals. Have a rockin' day.